there something in the field that you can look at?
Yeah, just in case there are any of the graduate student presentation judges here, to clarify, I am not part of the graduate student competition. Originally, Mitch Valerio, who is responsible for a lot of the work that I'm going to talk about, was going to come and present, but was not able to. So I'd like to acknowledge his contributions as well as those of Paul Gessler from U of I and Bruce Knapp from NRCS. A little bit of background on how this project came about is if you look at a map of the United States and where we have the completed soil survey information, all of you have probably seen this, you notice in the western U.S., you've got this mosaic of the green and all these light colors where you don't have available soil survey data. And I want to zoom in up here into northern Idaho and eastern Washington, western Montana, this area right here, and you'll notice that the light-colored areas up here where we don't have the information correspond to what is the Kinnexu National Forest. And this is true of a lot of the national forests in the West where they have soils information and they've done different types of soil inventory, but most of these have not been put into NASIS or into Web Soil Survey for that matter. And it's actually gotten to the point, in our region anyway, where this has caused some problems. So the area that I'm going to be talking about, this Kinnexu National Forest, which is essentially our study area, is it did have a land system inventory conducted back in the 1970s and 1980s by the Forest Service. And this is an Order 3 type of inventory. Some of you may be familiar with the mapping is really done on the basis of soil characteristics, landform, and what is presumed to be climax vegetation. And so there is some good soils information. It's just unable to be converted over, or it had not been. And in the case of the Kinnexu National Forest and some of the others, there's a move underway because the Forest Service really needs to have some documented soil survey information to get these land system inventories incorporated into NASIS and Web Soil Survey. There are issues with it. I don't have time to go into all of them, but a couple of the ones that I'd like to point out in the case of our study area is that when a lot of the mapping was done, we did not have the Andisol order in soil taxonomy. And even though the presence of volcanic ash was recognized, we had there was a very different approach to how you recognize that in terms of taxonomic units. And the second point down here, that spodosols were not recognized in the area. And that's kind of what gave rise to this study. And it's, I think, a little bit more of an issue because we knew from past work that had been done up in the study area that, in fact, we did have podzolized soils. And you can see a couple of examples here. We would see quite a range in the morphological expression of podzolization to not very strongly expressed. At lower elevations and up here at higher elevations, a fairly good expression of it. And so at these earlier studies and even looking at the chemistry side of it, this is a graph showing the percent oxalate iron and aluminum by horizon, and you can see this pronounced bulge here in oxalate aluminum and iron in the BHS horizon and then dropping back off here. So the zone of eluviation in the E or albic horizon, and then the accumulation here in the spodic horizon. So we knew they were there, but for various reasons, they were never included in any of these land system inventory units. The problem with the work that had been done up there was that it's very limited geographic extent compared to the entire forest that you see here. So it's a little bit difficult to extrapolate. And that kind of formed the basis for this project. And our objectives were to try and develop a terrain-based model or models that we could use to predict the spatial distribution of these spodosols, and then secondly, try and come up with a digital map layer that we could use to supplement the existing land system inventory information that exists, and hopefully get all this rolled into a final product somehow. The study area is, I guess, generally characterized by being glaciated. Most of it's mountainous, and throughout a very sizable percentage of it, it's mantled with volcanic ash. The elevations represent quite a range there from about 650 meters up to about 2,300 meters. And because of this wide range in elevation, we see a pretty big range in climatic factors as well. The soils have xeric or eutic soil moisture regimes. Annual precipitation might range from 700 millimeters on up to somewhere around 2,000 millimeters. And the soil temperature regimes are predominantly frigid and cryic. So these are cold soils. I mentioned the volcanic ash mantles that you find there. And really, the study area, which you see right up in here, has been influenced mainly by two Holocene deposits of volcanic ash. The main one is shown here, emanating from Mount Mazama, which is now Crater Lake, Oregon. And you can see this area of ashfall throughout the Pacific Northwest and on up into Canada. And this ashfall, at least in the study area, dumped up to maybe about half a meter of volcanic ash. You can see this mantle right here in the soil profile. And this is about 7,600 years old. And then back in 1800, Mount St. Helens, which has been a very active volcano over the years, had a much smaller eruption, and it has this plume of ash that you can see extending up. It's bordered by this dark blue line right up in here, but it deposited maybe a few centimeters of this stuff up in the study area. And you can see this ash showing up as this white layer right up at the surface. It would be right at the surface of the mineral soil, right underneath the O horizons. And I think this may be what has partly responsible for not recognizing spodosols in these landscapes, is that people were aware of this ash and realized that if you see these light white colors up here that might look like an albic horizon, the chances are they're not. They're actually just this unweathered volcanic ash. And I think this was a lot of the confusion. Well, to approach this problem, we decided to use a stratified random sampling design. And based on previous work and work done elsewhere, we were hypothesizing that the distribution of these podzolized soils would be a function of climate. And we had already seen in this area that there is a what appears to be a difference in morphology as we go up in elevation, which we presume is because of the associated increase in mean annual precipitation and snowpack. So, and then also the other factors, solar insolation, or basically aspect and slope steepness and things like that, how much solar radiation a particular area of the landscape is getting. So what we did is take the study area and split it up into these different categories of low, medium, high solar insolation, low, medium, and high elevation, and then create this matrix here where we have nine combinations of these two variables. And if we illustrate what this looks like on the landscape, then you can see the arrangement of these different combinations of insolation and elevation throughout the landscape. These brown colors representing some of the typically the higher elevation areas that you see in the study area, and in the case of the dark brown here, these would most likely represent the more southerly aspects. And just a close up, you can see what a few of the drainages up there would look like, with the north-facing slope. Here would be the south-facing slope, high elevation, high solar insolation. So we randomly selected sampling sites from this what I just showed you. And these were visited in the field using GIS and GPR and trying to navigate to these spots. And these were picked randomly. Inevitably, you'd get to a site and the access would be limited or disturbance or some other property. You'd go to the next randomly selected one. And where we were able to get to the pre-selected sites, standard profile site descriptions were done. And then samples were collected for subsequent laboratory analyses, selective dissolution, oxalate, pyrophosphate, the optical density, oxalate extract, pH, sodium fluoride pH, KCl pH, and so on. And we ended up with 72 sampling sites. You can see the distribution of them here throughout the forest, the red dots. And this represents eight samples from each combination of solar insolation and elevation. What we found in terms of the soils, I'll just give you a quick view here. We found soils like the one you see here on the left that's what we call a good spodosol. You go through all the criteria in soil taxonomy. It looks like one. It meets the chemical criteria. We have an albic horizon and a spodic horizon. No problem. Unfortunately, we ran into a lot of these kinds of soils, too, that have the E and the BH or BS type of morphology, but when you get into taxonomy, for varying reasons, they don't qualify as a good spodosol. So these are spodosols with an asterisk. And you can see in this one, here's the E horizon, and a lot of the reasons that these are excluded are because maybe the soil, the albic horizon is not contained in 50% or more of each pedon, or we also ran into this quite often, the colors of the E horizons are just a little, maybe one color chip too dark to meet the albic criteria. But for all intents and purposes, we think of these as podzolized soils. We also found quite a few that had spodic horizons in them, but they did not have the good spodosol morphology. And in fact, a lot of them, we didn't even know it was a spodic horizon until we got the laboratory results. So there really wasn't something we could key into in the field. And then finally, there were the soils that were clearly non-podzolized or non-spodic soils. And the way it shook out, we ended up with about 10 letter of the law spodosols, about 16 of these guys that all call them spodosols with an asterisk, and then 17 soils with spodic horizons, and then the remainder non-spodic. Total 68. We had to throw out a couple because of disturbance, and Mitch isn't here, so I can say some mislabeling problems with samples. But that was very minor. We've all done it. Come on. So what we decided to do for purposes of moving on was to take these first two categories of the spodosols and these one-chip spodosols, or the ones with the asterisk, and call these the podzolized or spodosols, and then these we grouped as the non-spodosols. And we did a lot of preliminary data analysis in trying to see where we would find these soils. And one thing that I think provided a very good way to look at this is using a combination of elevation and aspect. So in this particular diagram, these concentric lines represent elevation. Here's 500 meters increasing to 2,000 meters up here in the center. And then, of course, due north, 0 degrees, 90 degrees, 180, and 270. And the soils that we're classifying as spodosols here show up as the red triangles. The green represents the non-spodosols. And it's pretty clear that in looking at this, if you look at the red triangles, that most of them tend to be at the higher elevations, and also most of them tend to be on a more northerly aspect. So they kind of encompass this amount of the diagram. And with the exception of this one guy right here, all of these soils down at the bottom are non-spodosols. So what we wanted to do was try and take this type of information, see if we could feed it into a classification and regression tree and come up with some sort of a rule-based model that we could use to predict these things. We looked at a whole bunch of terrain, environmental attributes. This is just a partial list of all of them. There are others, but these tended to be the ones that showed up as being a little bit more important, looking at box plots and things like that. So we developed several classification trees where we take all of our training data, and then in this particular model, which happens to be the one that worked out the best, radiation, this is solar radiation here, provides the first split, and if we follow this down to this node, 20 of the soils were classified as non-spodic, and 0 were classified as spodosols or spodic. And then you can see here an elevation break. These would be lower elevation soils to the left, higher elevation soils here, another radiation break, and then another elevation down here. And just to, instead of focusing on the whole thing, if you look at the left side of the diagram or the tree, you can see that most of the non-podzolized soils tend to be at lower elevations where you have high solar radiation. And over on the right side of the tree, we can do a pretty good job of separating out the podzolized soils if we look at higher elevations. And by the time you get down through the tree, these are the soils that also tend to have fairly low solar radiation. So what we did is take this particular model then and use it to generate a map. So you can see here the first two nodes of the model, we just interpreted this as Spodosol's absent from the landscape. These two nodes in here, Spodosol's and or integrades may be present. And then finally, the last node here, Spodosol's are dominant. And this is what the resulting map looked like for our study area. And we found that this red area, Spodosol's are dominant. This represents about 11% of the study area. And down here, the green area is about 77% where we don't expect to find Spodosol's. And we have the yellow in the middle, which is a little bit problematic. So the last thing we're trying to do is see, okay, how can we take this information and tie it in with this land system inventory data? And you can see the example of the land system inventory up here with all the polygons on the landscape. So we combined that with our model, and we ended up with this type of a thing. The colors don't show up on there. But if you look at it up close, and this is just one little portion up here of the study area, you can see the map units that we would expect to contain Spodosol's in them. The green would represent the map units where we would not expect to find Spodosol's. And then the yellow areas in here, as I said, a bit more problematic where we may or may not find Spodosol's. So I guess in conclusion here, as proxies for effective precipitation and snowpack, elevation and solar radiation look like they do a pretty good job of helping us predict where we're going to find these podzolized soils on the landscape. And then secondly, these soils with spodic morphology actually comprise a fairly significant portion of the landscape up there, and this is particularly true at the higher elevations. And hopefully this is some of the information that's going to get carried into NASA's and Webb Soil Survey. Okay. One last thing, I would like to acknowledge the NRCS Soil Survey Center for some financial and various types of support, some of the field help and lab work, help in the project as well.